Hello, everybody. Welcome to Cloud Cover Show. This is Haixi. I have been a long-time Netflix user myself, from back in the days when they sent you these DVD discs in the red envelopes, till today when they stream movies and TV episodes directly to my Xbox. So I guess streaming video is one of the most network-demanding and performance-demanding applications you can ever write. And when you have Netflix serving millions of customers around the globe, you have to make sure your application is scalable, available, and fault tolerant. So it's always fascinating to me to learn how Netflix designs, implements, and hosts such a large-scale, high-performance application. And it's also interesting to see how Netflix uses your methodologies, tools, and open-source projects to share your experiences and to influence the industry. So today, I'm very glad to have Andy Glover from Netflix joining us to share about Netflix, one of the to share about Spinnaker, one of the Netflix open source projects. And I'm also joined by Arun and Richard, who's the contributors and project leads from Microsoft's side. So welcome. So let's start with a round of self-introduction, starting from Andy.
Sure. Yeah, my name's Andy Glover, and I run the Spinnaker project at Netflix. I'm happy to be here.
Cool. Welcome.
I'm Arun Chandrasekhar. I'm the program manager for the Azure Developer Experience. I work as project lead for Azure Spinnaker.
Awesome. And Richard, by the way, Richard is the guy who got the Spinnaker project started at Microsoft in the first place.
Yes.
So it's all his fault. So
yes.
Go ahead.
So I'm Richard Guthrie, and I manage the technical relationship with Netflix. And found the project working with Andy, and we'll show you what we've done today.
Awesome. So let's start by putting things into perspective. So Andy, can you give us some background information, an overview of the Spinnaker project,
Especially
what it is and where it fits, and why it could be interesting to our audience?
Sure. So Spinnaker is the is a continuous delivery platform that we built from the ground up, taking a lot of lessons learned from the last 6-7 years of being in the cloud. So Netflix went to the cloud, like I said, 6-7 years ago, and built a lot of tooling to facilitate, you know, heavy lifting all of our apps in the cloud and then moving fast in the cloud in terms of, we see continuous delivery as a, you know, a differentiator. It facilitates moving fast in terms of, you know, developers make changes, we can put those changes in production as quick as possible with a lot of reliability, confidence, and then at the end of the day, our end users can have a better experience, you know, with Netflix.
Okay.
So we've invested in tooling to facilitate continuous delivery, and we've gone through some iterations. Spinnaker is not the first tool or platform we've built. In fact, it's the it's kind of the embodiment of 3 or 4 different tools, kind of the evolution of continuous delivery at Netflix. And we've open sourced some of those other tools, Asgard being one of them. And we've learned a ton of lessons about, you know, how to manage, you know, assets in the cloud and then how to get stuff there quickly. And so Spinnaker, we started it about 1.5 years ago, maybe almost 2 years now, from the ground up to build a you know, easy to use platform that facilitates rapid delivery of software assets to the cloud. A couple of interesting things about Spinnaker is we made it highly pluggable. Not only the asset that you deploy, so you could deploy a VM, a jar file, a Docker image, a JavaScript application, doesn't matter. We wanted flexibility for what you could deploy. Then you have a, you know, a workflow, a pipeline, you know, a choreographed process by which you could do, you know, steps, and we'll talk about that in a little while, show it actually, steps to move into some deployment. Those stages themselves are pluggable, and you can, the pipelines themselves, you can create them in any way you want, and then you can add new stages, and we'll talk about that. And then most importantly, why you know, Microsoft and Netflix are, you know, speaking at this table, is that we made the endpoint to which you deploy pluggable as well. So Netflix is heavily invested in AWS, but we wanted to reach out and partner with other cloud vendors to understand kind of how they do how they do cloud operations, because we saw it as kind of a symbiotic relationship in that, you know we can learn from you all and the various people that we use, Azure and Spinnaker, and ostensibly they'll learn from us as well. So and we open source Spinnaker about six, seven months ago. And it's been an awesome, awesome ride. We've learned a lot from, Microsoft and the rest of the community. We're getting pull requests from obviously Microsoft, but other, other community members, and Netflix is taking advantage of those pull requests and vice versa. I'm sure you guys are learning something from us. So it's been an awesome ride.
Great. So Spinnaker is used by Netflix yourself internally, and it's made public available. So anybody, if you want a continuous integration to Amazon, to Azure, you can use that project.
So it's open source. It works with AWS, Azure, Google Cloud Platform, Kubernetes, and Cloud Foundry.
Okay, awesome. So in terms of Kubernetes, basically you are just deploying container applications. So is that a single container application, or it's orchestrated?
It's orchestrated.
Okay, cool. So you have a Docker Swarm that you...
Well, yeah. So the integration work with Kubernetes was done by the Google team.
Okay.
If we want more questions, we could definitely go to Spinnaker.io and see it. There's a video from the Google GCP Next conference where they demoed it.
Awesome. So thank you for the introduction. So let's move to Arun. You will speak from the Microsoft side, especially how we got here, where we are, and where we're going with this.
Yep. Firstly, why Azure Spinnaker? Like, as Andy was pointing out, the thing that really attracted us to this project when Richard started talking to our team was that this really enables like a cross-cloud experience where we can use Azure. It's not just Microsoft, but you can also partner with like Kubernetes and Cloud Foundry and a whole bunch of other cloud providers so that your pipeline can work effectively beyond just one cloud provider and can leverage the best of breed of different providers that exist out there. And the second thing that is really impressive about Spinnaker is that it's one of the most vibrant OSS communities in GitHub. So it has for instance, in Slack, it has 500 plus users. It has 1,400 plus followers in GitHub. So it's a really good OSS community that has been sort of seeded by Netflix. And that helps as people bring in native support for other OSS tools, like Jenkins for CI and Packer for baking images. So it's that's really something that we wanted to sort of leverage when we start delivering stuff from into Azure. So that was one of the big things. And finally, and I'll go through this a little bit deeper in the next couple of slides, is the notion of immutable pipeline is something that is central to the Spinnaker, which is basically the notion that I'll release VMs and containers from images that are fully baked rather than deploy to my production using configuration and scripts. And that is effectively, I think, one of the most complementary things to our focus on containers in Microsoft. And it also gives us the flexibility to do a whole bunch of deployment strategies, as you'll see Andy and Richard kind of explain. Mm-hmm. So what is the sort of broad tool chain that we're looking for when we talk about Azure Spinnaker? If you look at a typical release pipeline for continuous delivery, you'd look at things like a developer checks in code into GitHub, which triggers a build with Jenkins, and then it goes ahead and triggers a pipeline, which could be any kind of release pipeline like Spinnaker, which orchestrates it across a bunch of test and pre-production stages, and then eventually it goes to production. And in our case, we have integrated with Azure VM Scaleset so that you can basically take these take your application all the way to production in Azure. Now, how is this different from what we normally see in any kind of continuous delivery cycle? Is the key distinction here is instead of my build needing to be deployed using scripts and configuration, as I mentioned earlier, it is actually baked. It bakes the application into the image itself, and the image is reused across the different stages. So the benefit of that is I can have an exact replica of what my application is going to look like in production, right from my development environment onwards, and that's a very powerful concept that's tied deeply into the Spinnaker design.
Mm-hmm. So when you say images, you're just referring to VM images or Docker images as well.
So it could be both. You can support VHDs, you can support container images. It's basically any kind of images.
I think this is a key point in that while we did the work for Azure, Azure also supports Kubernetes as an orchestrator for containers, and we kind of get some of that with users can take advantage of that with minimal work to enable it, because it's already been done for that platform.
Cool. And one of the other things is, as we have existing, like similar to Kubernetes, we have other OSS platforms like Packer, which Spinnaker natively supports, so you can take advantage of existing baking formats and image formats and remain sort of format neutral even at the level of baking, so which is what Packer provides. And then finally, we also can sort of specialize on, in Azure, we have something called Azure DevTest Labs, which can provide a more specialized baking mechanism for Azure VMs and containers. So that's kind of the high level, and as Richard is just pointing out, the OSS mechanisms that that Spinnaker provides today are already natively supported in Azure. So for instance, if I want to use containers, I can use Kubernetes. Spinnaker integrates with Kubernetes, and Kubernetes is like well integrated with Azure as is, so we can just use that for our container story. Similarly, we have also collaborated closely with Cloud Foundry in order to support Cloud Foundry as a cloud provider using Azure as its backbone. And what we are building as part of this this collaboration specifically are some Azure Cloud drivers that light up for the virtual machine scale sets offering, which just GA'd recently, mm-hmm. and as well as in the future switching to Azure Container Service, and eventually building out our own sort of hosted version on Azure of Spinnaker to make it really easy for users to get started consuming this. So that's kind of the
awesome. So we are now supporting the VM skill sets, and
yes.
we are moving towards the
container
service in the future. Cool. So I guess, thank you guys for overview of the project. And in case you don't know, my primary job on this show is to inject random questions to a surprise speaker. So here's a random question. So let's say if I'm a developer, I want to adopt Spinnaker. How do I start? Where do I go? What's the
sure.
steps?
So
I mean, it seems it's like a complete integration pipeline. Mm-hmm. It could be like really complex to set it up. Maybe.
Yes.
I know it's a full-time job to set up those kind of things.
Yes. So I mean, one of the things, if you wanted to sort of get involved, you can do it at three layers. Mm-hmm. One is, do you want to just try Spinnaker? Like, you just want to use it. You don't want to go through the sort of, you want enough guidance to be able to do it, then you can just contact us. We're like, you just go to azitspinnaker@microsoft.com, mm-hmm. and you email us, and we will actually guide you through the experience of how do you try Spinnaker with Azure. The second aspect is basically participating in the OSS community itself. If you want to contribute code to the community, or you're interested in specific gaps in there that you want to talk about, then we have a community in github.com/spinnaker, which will give you the ability to sort of participate in code. And then there is a getting started guide that's coming soon, which will have detailed step-by-step instructions for people to try it on their own. But in the meantime, spinnaker.io is sort of the core hub for that, but mm-hmm. watch out for this tiny URL, and we'll start putting a bunch of content in there to hook up Azure Cloud Provider into Spinnaker.
Okay, we'll make sure we have all the links at the bottom of this video.
Yeah.
So I guess we are done with the overview part. Now
yes.
we are moving to the exciting part.
Demos.
We want to see this thing live. So we will pause a little. We'll switch machines to Richard's machine. Mm-hmm. What are you going to show us?
So we've got a couple of demos today. So first we're going to take a walk through the management portal and just get familiar with some of the key constructs in Spinnaker. We'll talk about server groups and mm-hmm. clusters and load balancers and security groups. Then we're going to go through, Andy's going to take us through a couple of demo pipelines. And then we're going to take an actual pipeline that I've staged that's actually doing a real upgrade in production using VM scale sets.
To Azure.
Yep,
awesome.
To Azure. So.
Okay, we're back.
Okay, so what I'm going to take you through is the Spinnaker project dashboard. So we're going to start here, and this is an easy way for teams to organize their infrastructure, their applications, and the pipelines that they care about into a view that allows them to quickly check status once they're actually in full up operation. So right here, I've got the Azure Fabricam Azure API service, and that service has two server groups in the East US, two server groups in the West US. We'll talk about those shortly. And I've got a couple of pipelines that I care about that are executing in Spinnaker. So let's go ahead and start looking at the infrastructure. So Spinnaker has a couple of logical constructs. One is the application. It's just a way to group your microservices into logical groupings that allow us to easily find and make sense of the infrastructure under management. So what I have here is a cluster that is part of the Fabricam API application. This cluster spans regions, so I have a scale set or server group in the East US. And it is on version 0, and I have a scale set in the West US of version 0. And you can see these little chiclets here where I'm also getting real-time status of those actual instances and the overall health of them. As you can see on the right here, there's a rich set of filter criteria. So if I just wanted to see resources in the East US, I can filter down, or if I want to see in the West US, I can filter down. I can click on the individual server groups, and from there I'll get status of what image is it running, what SKU am I on, the size, the health, what security groups am I connected to. So a lot of connectedness of the resources, so I can really start to visualize my infrastructure that's under management by Spinnaker. So, we're going to transition from clusters, and a cluster is a logical grouping of server groups that are basically the same microservice. You can have different versions, and we'll see that here shortly when we're running the pipeline, but it's all the resource, the actual server groups or scale sets that make up that that service. So let's go over to load balancers. So here I've got a whole set of different load balancers. So I've got one, let's just filter down to our front-end API that we were just showing. So I've got two load balancers again. I've got one in the East US, one in the West US. And when I click on those load balancers, I can see what server groups are connected to it. I can get the actual DNS host entry for that service. I can get status, what listeners, so what port forwarding do I have enabled, and as well as what server groups and health checks. So a lot of information that, and we continue to wire up more and richer information and telemetry into these resources over time. So the next one, the concept of security groups, and I'll shortly talk about how these map to resources in Azure, but security groups manage the ingress of traffic into the cluster or server groups. And so here I've got, in the East US, I've got a security group set up, and it's allowing TCP over port 80 into the server group that it's, our server groups that it's connected to. So let's see how that translates into resources in Azure. So
actually, before I move forward, sure. So you showed the whole topology of your application. Mm-hmm. How is this topology defined? Do you define using a UI, or is there some kind of document you describe it?
So with Azure, all of the resources are built using ARM templates. So we can actually go into Resource Explorer and see how our resources are all connected. So just to show what I was just looking at. And we'll go and look at the UI here shortly. So let's go find the network security groups. So we can see our front-end security group. So all of this is defined using Azure Resource Manager. So if we wanted to see how our Azure, how these applications come together, mm-hmm. we can actually visualize those using the ARM tools that are available. Yeah.
So you can define your whole application declaratively using the template.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct.
Cool.
Okay, so let's talk about how this maps into Azure. So we were looking at front-end API. So the server group in front-end API is actually this virtual machine scale set. That virtual machine scale set is connected to a load balancer in Spinnaker. That translates into an Azure application gateway that we are using to manage the traffic and actually manage our upgrades, which we'll show here shortly. We, as part of this, we also added in a capability where we create a load balancer as well, an internal facing load balancer. And what this allows us to do is manage our, like if I wanted to be able to SSH into the instance or RDP into the Windows instance, we allow you to do that via this connected load balancer. That's just a feature that we added for users to take advantage of if they wanted to. So the next thing is our network security group, which I can see here. That maps to our Spinnaker security groups, and I have my outbound or inbound security rules defined. And then the last couple of pieces is we have a bunch of public IP resources that map to the various public facing resources in Spinnaker.
Mm-hmm. And also in this resource group, I see you have like a production test environment.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to show us where those environments are?
I'm going to show those here shortly when we go through the upgrade pipeline.
Cool.
But
cool.
The key thing, one of one of the things I failed to mention is, Spinnaker has this notion of an application. We map applications to resource groups in each region. So if my application spans two regions, mm-hmm. as you can see here, I have two resource groups, Fabricam API East US, Fabricam API West US. And the other thing that we take advantage of with Azure, and the other clouds also do something very similar, is we use the tagging mechanism in Azure. So it allows you to really, if you wanted to use the portal, you could go search for resources using the tags, and these tags map to the same naming convention in Spinnaker as well. So it's a nice way to tie the two together.
Okay. So when we use the Spinnaker UI, you can filter by those tags.
That's correct. Okay. That's correct. All right. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Andy, and we're going to go through some basic pipelines, and then we're going to go and actually do an upgrade.
Yeah, let's see some pipelines.
Yeah. All right. Mm-hmm.
Now we are back. So Andy, take it away.
Yeah, so what I wanted to show were a couple pipelines just to kind of get get people familiar with how Spinnaker, how it looks, and then in terms of how it acts with pipelines, with stages, and that'll set the context for some really cool pipelines that you're going to show. But at the end of the day, pipelines have, they are a series of stages that, and those stages are completely up to you in terms of how you want to choreograph them. And pipelines are triggered off of some event. And so what I have here is a very simple pipeline that's triggered off a Jenkins job. And in this case, what happened is we did a bake. And baking, as Arun described earlier, is the ability, or is the process by which we make a VM. We snapshot it, you know, we take your app, we put it on a VM, in this case an Ubuntu, you know, image, and we essentially snapshot it. Mm-hmm. And then that becomes the deployable asset through the rest of the pipeline. Mm-hmm. In this case, we baked in two different regions. And then once the bake was done, we did a deployment, and we deployed to one region in this case. But this is a very, very simple pipeline. You have audit capability in terms of you know what build triggered it, and then you have all the details, and you can get more details in terms of you can click on the actual, you know, in this case, the ASG that was deployed on the bake. You can get details on terms of going to the bakery and understand what exactly was baked into that image. Mm-hmm. And of course, if one of these failed, it'd be red, and I'll show you that in a second. And as I was saying, triggers can be a Jenkins job. Mm-hmm. Travis CI is also supported. Triggers can be a cron tab. So in this case, here's a pipeline that runs every 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Triggers can be other pipelines. So pipelines can call other pipelines. Triggers can be a git commit as well.
Awesome.
So there's plenty of triggers, and I'll show you all those configurations. Something interesting about this pipeline that I wanted to point out is that the previous pipeline I showed was very serial. We do a bake and then you do a deploy. Very mm-hmm. simple. In this case, this particular pipeline, it's done every 15 minutes. It does a bake, then it does a deploy, but then it does two things in parallel. It does this thing called check preconditions, which you're going to show, so I'll let mm-hmm. you get more details there. But what you can see here, though, is that this wait, and this is a demo one where we're actually testing a feature of Spinnaker, but you can see here is that we're running two stages in parallel. Mm-hmm. And then you know, beyond that stage, there's one more stage. So you do have the ability to do parallel stages, and mm-hmm. the parallelism you want to do there is entirely up to you. Okay. And in fact, yours does some of that as well. So we'll get to that.
So in this particular pipeline, the checking preconditions, that's some kind of auto test that you're doing?
Could be, yeah.
Okay.
Those preconditions so one thing I failed to mention is that pipelines, there's a context, and you can set, you can have parameters go through it. Those parameters mm-hmm. can be coming from, you know, from Jenkins. Mm-hmm. And so those preconditions could be some sort of test in terms of, you're going to do it as a parameter. So we'll get into that. But yeah. At the end of the day, it's kind of like a judgment stage, and we also support manual judgment. But it's you know, validate these preconditions before you go to the next step.
Okay, and I guess you can stop a pipeline, or can you roll it back?
You stop or branch.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're going to show us something?
Okay.
Yeah, and you can cancel a pipeline in process and whatnot. The next thing I wanted to show you is a more sophisticated pipeline, in this case, a pipeline that actually is failing, which is fine. Failing for the right reasons. So in this case, there's this service. I said one thing is that the asset is pluggable in terms of it can be a VM, it can be a Docker image. And In this particular pipeline, what you have here is kind of a promotion process. So you have different environments. You were asking about that earlier, like dev, test, prod. Mm-hmm. And you can certainly have a pipeline that pushes from a Git commit right into prod if you wanted. Or you could have a more kind of promotional process whereby you can have a pipeline that goes to test and you can validate some things and then do another pipeline that takes that thing from test and into prod. And that's what this is doing. Exactly. So this find AMI, very, very much AWS centric, but it's finding an AMI that's already been validated in some other other environment. Mm-hmm. And so they're taking a find AMI that's in test. So this team has said, hey, this thing in test, there's some other pipeline that deployed it there. They did some tests. They're happy with it. Now they want to promote it to prod.
Okay.
So the first stage in this pipeline is, get that running asset out of test and move it into prod. Mm-hmm. And then the next one is fairly interesting, and this is very, very, very Netflix specific. But it's instructive nonetheless. We have this service called ACA, which is Automated Canary Analysis. And the idea here is that you can stand up a service in production, and you can allow a small amount of traffic to hit it, live traffic, i.e. all four of us when we stream tonight. Mm-hmm. Some portion of traffic will hit the service, and we have this thing called ACA, which is monitoring it, looking at various metrics that you, the service team has set up that I want to watch, whatever. Requests per second, errors per second, whatever it is, memory usage. And you can score it. Or actually, the service scores it, but you can set a threshold. So in this case, what's interesting is that they set a threshold of 90. So they run this ACA in three different regions. Mm-hmm. And they run it for about 4 hours. And the ACA service reported back and said, hey, look, this it scored it as an 88 across the board. And so in this case, the canary process itself succeeded, but Spinnaker is failing the pipeline because of this threshold. They said it's got to be better than 90 for us to move on.
Yeah,
had it been greater than 90, it would have gone to the next step, which is wait for user approval, which is a manual step. So they still want one person to kind of bless this thing and say, yep, we're happy. In this case, they'd get an email that says, go forward or not. They come in here and say yes, and as you can see, as I talked about earlier, it does a parallel deploy. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's pulling once to EU and then once to US. One other thing that's interesting about here is that this deploy to EU, they've also set up a deployment window. So they only want to deploy to EU between 4 and 10 p.m. Pacific, and in the U.S., between 9 and 2. That's 4. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
So that's the working time. Hour people at work not watching videos, I guess?
Yeah. So global deployment windows in the case of Netflix could be, we want to do this deployment when we have the most people around in case there's a problem, or we want to deploy it when there's low traffic. Mm-hmm. It's really up to each team in terms of when they want to do that.
There are a couple of interesting things about this pipeline. First, this pipeline just does the promotion process.
Yeah.
So it can be linked to other pipelines mm-hmm. to do promotion of all the services you build. Pipeline itself is pretty generic, right? Other than the ACA.
You're right, it is fairly generic. And this is a common kind of pattern we see at Netflix in terms of let's promote from test into prod, do an ACA before we actually run mm-hmm. Full on in prod.
Yeah. And don't hate me for this. So ACA service sounds really interesting, but is it accessible outside?
So unfortunately, no. The ACA service has not been open sourced. That team, I believe, has desires to do so, but I can't speak to when they want to do that. It is a service that lives on top of our telemetry system, which is called Atlas. Atlas itself has been open sourced.
I see.
But there's nothing to stop the open source community from kind of building their own ACA process. Mm-hmm.
So if you want, you can build your own service and plug into the pipeline
exactly.
to have similar effects.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The next thing, just real quick, I wanted to create a pipeline, just to kind of show the process of of doing it. And so if I create a pipeline for this, this is a test service. And I just wanted to go over real quick. I talked about triggers. So there's various triggers, as I said, cron, Git, Jenkins, or other pipelines. Richard will show this in terms of you can have parameters that go through a pipeline. You have a rich notification capability in that you can as you can see, you can get an email, an SMS, you know, Slack bump in terms of pipeline starting, pipelines failed, pipelines completed, and you can do it at each stage. So if you're very, you know, and you can set who gets it. So the pipeline mm-hmm. itself started, but I want to know when ACA starts. So then you could say that. You then can you can have stages, right? And we have various stages at Netflix. There are some, this whole thing about stages being pluggable, because in Netflix's case, there are stages that aren't available in the open source world. Mm-hmm. First one being ACA,
okay.
which again, the service it relies on is an open source. So this, you know, so there's nothing to stop. Let's say, you know, a big enterprise that's using Azure from creating their own stages that is just unique to that enterprise, and they can plug those into Spinnaker. But we have, you know, a host of stages. You know, we talked about Bake. There's Canary. There's the check preconditions. An important one is deploy, as you could well imagine. Yeah. And so, you know, we can do deploys to multiple regions and whatnot. What I want to do is add another stage so I can show you some other ones. You know, then there's various, again, the workflow of deploying into various environments usually involves some choreograph steps. Disable this, enable this, or do something. Mm-hmm. So you have that ability with all these different stages. You can run you can run Jenkins jobs if you need to. A lot of there's a significant, let's say, legacy infrastructure of Jenkins jobs that run tests against live services in certain environments. So, you know, you could run a Jenkins job, and the the list goes on. They're fairly self-explanatory. What's interesting is I was talking about this idea of so we could have parallel stages. So in this case, we could do a deploy and a, maybe you do a whatever, disable the cluster at the same time. And you can see these are two parallel ones. And that's how you do that in terms of just setting up the depends on. So we have the fork join capability in Spinnaker. And then the last thing I wanted to just quickly go over before I turn it back to Richard is cluster management. So Richard kind of showed a little of that previously. In this case, this is a cluster running in AWS that has many instances running in various regions. And I think what's instructive about this particular view is that you can see that recently a deployment happened in US East. We have V279, so that's the version running build, 5242. This was deployed. Let's just assume it was deployed today, because you can see below it is a disabled ASG. And so this pattern is called red-black, in the sense of you have a live ASG, you deploy a new one, and then you start funneling traffic to the new one and you disable the old one. However, it's still there in case you need a rollback capability. Okay. So if I go back to the current one that's taking traffic, it's green, it's live, it's actually receiving traffic, you'll see that as a server group action, I can do a rollback. And initiating that rollback would then obviously disable V279 and enable V278.
Okay, awesome.
And so, you have all those abilities with Spinnaker. In this case, obviously, I'm working with AWS, but you have those abilities, obviously, with Azure and GCP and whatnot.
So you show this rollback operation from the menu.
Yeah.
Can it be part of the pipeline as well?
Exactly. And I know Richard's going to show that.
Okay, we're back again. So, Richard.
Okay, so what I'm going to take you through now is an actual pipeline that's executing, and we've created a demo application. And the scenario is, I have an application. I found a performance issue, so here I'm going to go and I'm just going to put something in. And we're going to see it takes a long time to actually execute this task. So we've gone and we found the problem. We've got our code change ready to go. And we've gone ahead and checked in the code. And there's a Jenkins job that's actually run here. So if I look at the... last set, we ran it a little while ago, and this pipeline is in the process of execution. Mm-hmm. So I'm at the step of I'm waiting for a manual judgment. So let's just walk through what this pipeline did. So
So the Jenkins job was triggering this pipeline.
The Jenkins job triggered this pipeline, mm-hmm. and then the very first step is to go ahead and bake an image. So we've run, which also triggers a Jenkins job, so we were using Jenkins to bake in this case, mm-hmm. and that Jenkins job passed out a parameters file, which is this, that told us that, hey, I've got version 2 of my image, here's the storage location, it's type Linux, here's the version of the image that I want. Mm-hmm. So we've got an image that's already baked, it's already been deployed to Azure Storage, and it's ready to go. And so if we go back to this pipeline, after I baked, I ran a couple of set, I ran some unit tests, I ran my integration test, and I verified my bake. And I made the deploy to production, which mm-hmm. is the next phase, I made that dependent on all three of those being successful. Mm-hmm. But to speed up the actual execution of the pipeline, I wanted to deploy this to a test cluster so that I can go run some additional user acceptance and make sure that everything's ready okay. to go.
So this one only depends on the unit test, so it can go through quickly.
Exactly. So okay. we just say, hey, unit tests are good. Let's get it into test so that right. we can speed things up. After that, I enabled that test cluster. And so that cluster is actually live right now. And there's some automated tests running. And I also destroyed my previous test instance because I want to maximize my I want to minimize my resource consumption and reduce my cost as much as possible. So let's just go to the test cluster. So here we've got our V2 application. You can see if I run it, it's on a scale set. I've got different instances. So let's just go test our change. Took about 8 seconds last time. Oh, look, it's done. We're a lot faster. So hey, we fixed the problem. So
it's not doing enough work.
Let's go back to our pipeline. And you can see we're waiting on this manual judgment step. So when I click on the manual judgment task, I've mm-hmm. got a drop down here, and things look good. So I'm going to go ahead and say succeeded, and I'm going to go ahead and continue my pipeline. All right, so we are now off to the races, and this stage is actively executing. So you can see here pretty soon it's going to move into the succeeded. So let's go ahead and while that's taking place, we're going to go ahead and walk through the rest of the pipeline. So we're going to go down this succeeded path. Mm-hmm. You can see we've actually moved past that. So you can see we succeeded. Now we're in enable vNext production. So what this is doing is, because I ran the parallel execution and I staged that production server group, the load balancer is actually now in the process of switching traffic over to that V2 server group. And I saved time. I didn't have to go deploy after everything was good mm-hmm. because of this immutable pattern. The exact image that I tested and the exact server group that I tested is exactly what I just deployed to production. So that's really the benefit of that immutable pattern. Mm-hmm. And so after that, once it's done, and it's going to take a couple minutes here just to move traffic over, we're going to have another manual judgment. And so let's actually go into configure, and we'll go look at this and what this is doing. So here, I've actually set up two options for the user of the pipeline to go in. So I said, hey, is it succeeded, or is it healthy, or is it unhealthy? Mm-hmm. And now let's talk about how this plays into the preconditions, which are the next steps, and using the expression language and the rich extensibility that Spinnaker has. So I've actually taken the value that was passed, that was selected in the manual judgment, mm-hmm. That's part of the context. I've actually grabbed that out of the context in this expression, and I'm using that for my branching logic of what to do in the next step of the pipeline. So, and this expression language, so it's the Spring expression language, and you can pass in parameters from Jenkins, or mm-hmm. you can create your own parameters as part of the pipeline. Mm-hmm. You can even go in and we can actually go in here and edit the pipeline JSON, which is the configuration of the pipeline. I can go add parameters in here if I wanted to, which handles the cases where I have something that my workflow depends on, but Spinnaker doesn't provide that out of the box. So mm-hmm. very flexible in what you can do with Spinnaker. So after this manual judgment, let's say it's unhealthy, then I've got automation to go ahead and roll back vCurrent and destroy it. Now, one of the other things I wanted to talk about here is, so we're on the succeeded path right now. One of the things I set up as part of this pipeline is a restrict execution to specific time. So we're actually in that execution window, so awesome. We should go ahead and complete the upgrade, mm-hmm. which we did. But that way I could actually go execute my manual judgment sometime in the day, but wait, the operation's actually not going to take place until the defined maintenance window that I've set up. So a lot of flexibility to really configure Spinnaker to match the workflow that your team desires. And just sitting with Andy and team, looking at the various pipelines, because you guys have thousands of them at Netflix, looking at the every team kind of has their own little thing that, that makes their workflow work and makes their team function well. And you can see that in the pipelines. And I think they've done a really great job of making the stages and the way pipelines work very generic, so that you can actually really fit it to how you want to operate.
Yeah. I like the pipeline charts a lot. It visualizes everything that was happening in a very complex deployment.
Yep.
Yes.
So right now we're just waiting for this enable to complete. We can actually go check on the task. We should, looks like it usually takes about 4 minutes, so we've got about 30 or 45 more seconds.
So in terms of the context, the context got passed along the stages on the pipeline. But if I link multiple pipelines together, those contexts got passed over across the pipelines as well? Okay.
So I'm going to go ahead and close this window out. So when I went to the production service, I you saw I was hitting V1 of the app. We're going to go back to the production URL here in just a second once it's enabled, and we'll start seeing V2 of the service.
Yeah. And seeing of the time window constraint, so the task has to be carried out within that time window. What if the task didn't finish within that window? It started, but it didn't finish.
I think in that case, the Spinnaker will allow it to finish. I think it's more of when it starts.
Okay. So can you apply the same constraint window to the manual task, meaning you have to approve that thing within 3 hours?
Oh, interesting. yeah. Yeah, it would seem so, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And one of the coolest things about the rollback here is also because of the immutable pattern, the rollback here, again, becomes trivial, because all you're doing is you're switching back your to the previous cluster, rather than
you're just redirecting the load balancer.
Exactly. So you kind of solve rollback in a very elegant way.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yeah.
So right now we're just waiting for this task to finish, and actually it looks like it actually has finished.
The moment of truth.
Let's go to prod.
That's production.
And you can see we're in the V2 of our application.
Awesome.
We'll go ahead and do our check. Hey, it's moving fast.
Yes.
So life is good.
But you entered 2 there. Are you cheating?
Yes.
You should enter 4.
Oh, no, I entered. Okay.
Enter.
Let's do it again.
Put a letter. I'll trust you. Oh, it's in seconds. Okay.
So let's go back to the pipeline. As you can see, we're back in our manual judgment. So we're in our next stage. So we'd go ahead and. We have our next manual judgment. Everything looks healthy. We did the check. We'll go ahead and continue. And now Spinnaker is going to go ahead and tear down the infrastructure that we created. And everything's going to maximize our resource utilization on Azure.
Cool.
Nash, you were asking, you can also you can cancel a pipeline. You can pause one. You have that.
I see.
Yep.
Awesome.
So.
All right. Are there more demos you're showing?
Well,
that's it. That's all the demos we're showing. Yeah. This is great. I mean, seeing that entire pipeline going through stage by stage and have visualization and control over every single step, that's great. Especially when you talk about managing a lot of a complex environment like Netflix. I think having those kind of visibility and control is really critical.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think Arun will wrap up with some information. So we are back, but before I turn it to Arun, I just realized we actually have Linux, Mac, and Windows on the same show. I think that's a first. So Arun, you want to wrap up?
Yeah. So as I mentioned earlier, one of the key things that we're working on are a bunch of plugins for Azure. We started with VM scale sets, which is what Richard just showed you. And we are going to go, our next target is really Azure Container Service. So a brief summary of what's next. The first thing we want to do is make the Packer integration convenient with Azure images. So we would have the ability in Packer to bake Azure VHDs and ship to Azure with Spinnaker. So that's sort of our core focus right now. And then, we, as I mentioned, we'll start being able to release containers with Spinnaker to Azure Container Service. As I said, you can already do this with Kubernetes and all the existing cloud provider support for Cloud Foundry, and we'll light up the Azure Container Service support next. And finally, if it's like we are also going to make this getting started experience really easy by having an image which is hosted in Azure that you can run on your subscription, so that you can run Spinnaker itself on your subscription. So one of the things that Richard is doing, which we didn't kind of mention, is both Spinnaker and Jenkins in the demo that he just had is already hosted on Azure, so you don't have to worry about wiring it up from your on-premise. System. And finally, just to reiterate, please do get involved, and this is really a fantastic OSS community to be a part of. And I think if you have any questions or you want to try out Azure Spinnaker, please email azspinnaker@microsoft.com. If you want to do code participation, go to spinnaker.io, get yourself sort of acquainted with Spinnaker, and you can go to our GitHub community. And finally, watch out for our getting started guide at that tiny URL. Thanks.
Awesome. So do you guys have Twitter handles you want to share with the audience?
Sure.
So if you have, let's do one by one. So you just do this. Our editor will put your Twitter handle on the screen. So you have a Twitter handle?
I don't even know what it is, though. I don't. So no. I'm
okay.
He's a Twitter guy.
A Glover. A-G-L-O-V-E-R.
Perfect. I have one, but I don't know what it is.
All right. Yeah. Come on, guys.
I use Facebook.
Okay. All right. Again, thank you, gentlemen, for coming to the show. I think this is great to show this pipeline. And I can't wait for that Azure-hosted Spinnaker to be available to the public. Yeah. Thank you very much. And thank you for weaving. I'll see you next time.